Saturday Sport on RTE Radio 1 is sponsored by Joe Duffy Group. With over 1,000 approved cars to choose from nationwide, Joe Duffy has you covered. Think used cars. Think joeduffy.ie.
This is Saturday Sport on RTE Radio 1.
No problem. No problem, Chester.
You're welcome back to Saturday Sport. The latest score in the Airgrid under 20 Connacht final, Galway are cruising now. It's Galway 4-10, Roscommon 4 points. Roscommon haven't scored in the second half. Galway playing with a strong breeze. And the Ulster final is just underway, 5 minutes gone. Tyrone have got the opening score against Donegal. And we'll keep you up to date with those. Well, now it's time for our Saturday panel. And delighted to welcome. I'm looking forward to chatting with everybody here. 51551 is our text number. We're joined by Brian Cooper, who in Cheltenham Week can tell us what it's like to win the big race at Cheltenham. He's experienced that. Lisa Fallon, Chelsea women's football coach, who of course is part of our RTE coverage as well. And in my view, one of the, if I may say, Niall, in the nice possible way, one of my favourite footballers of recent years, Niall McNamee from Offaly, who unfortunately for you, you came at a time when Offaly weren't going great. But you'd have walked into any team in Ireland. How many years in total were you play, did you play senior with the county?
I'm still there, Des.
Yeah, I know. But
yeah, I'm back this year.
You began, when was your first
2003.
Year?
2003. Yeah, so this is my 18th season.
And you played minor at 15 or something, did you?
Yeah, I was on the minor panel, I think, at 14. I played the first championship at 15 and made my senior debut then at 17. So
it's a long, long time.
It's a long.
And list the medals from all of those years.
List of medals at intercounty level has been—it's been slight enough, I suppose. A few Division Four league medal, Division Two league medal. I suppose that's what you're looking at from an individual point of view. Nominated for an All Star and stuff. Got to an Ulster final in 06. Club level, obviously, we've had a bit more
success. A lot of success with Road, yeah.
Yeah. So, I suppose that kind of softened the blow a small bit. But at the same time, look at it. I really enjoyed it in terms of from an intercounty perspective. It's been very, very enjoyable. Great friendships made and.
That's kind of my point. I'm not saying all those years and you've won very little. My point is that you've played at such a high level for so long.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. Look at it again, and I suppose it's interesting. Over the last couple of years, you see the professionalism of it getting higher and higher and higher and higher, and it's been great. You know, you're learning new things every year. There's different things being added in, and you know, you'd be like a sponge trying to still. I'm 34 now, but you're still trying to see can you get an extra little bit out of yourself. And
did it take a lot to get you back in this year?
No, that's being honest. I retired in 2018, the end of that season. Oh, sorry, 2017, didn't play 2018. And John Mahan obviously came back in last year, and I really enjoyed it last year. John's very good, you know, very charismatic.
Yeah, it's not one of your teammates who said he was loving it as well.
That's brilliant. I just think from a, I suppose there's so much time and effort put into it. You know, he really brings that bit of fun element towards it that, you know, lads are obviously travelling long distances to train, and there's a lot of time, a lot of effort been going into it. And I suppose the one thing I will say is every night we're leaving training and going home, you know, most lads have a smile on their face. They're actually putting in a good session, and he's charismatic, you know. He's a good lad to have around the place. He's everyone gets on with him.
Good. And you have a good group, obviously, good spirit in the group.
There's a great spirit there, yeah. Actually, there's a lot of really, really good young guys that are, I suppose, being an intercounty footballer is definitely a lifestyle choice, you know. I suppose I would have seen that from early ages. That's all I wanted to do, really, was play intercounty football.
Well, you can't do much else if you are one, sure you can't.
No, and I suppose a lot of the guys nowadays are of similar mould. They're thinking that way. Obviously, they do a lot of work on their off-field career as well, but generally their main priority is intercounty football. And when you get a group like that, it's very, very enjoyable because, you know, you have everyone there and singing out the same hymn sheet, I suppose.
Because some people might think, you know, it'd be easy make so many sacrifices if you're playing with Kerry or, you know, one of the teams that's in contention for the All-Ireland, but that's not the case. Your fellas are just as committed.
Absolutely, yeah. And I suppose hope is one of the greatest things. You know, I think everyone needs a bit of hope. Yeah. And I suppose, like, from my own perspective, like, we would have been challenging in Division 1 in 2005, 2006, competing in the Leinster final. So when I look at the squad we have now and I look at the squad that was back then, like, a lot of similarities between both squads and a lot of very, very talented footballers back then and a lot of very, very talented footballers back, or as it is now. So, you know, I suppose that hope is always there that, you know, you kick on into Division 2 and next thing, hopefully.
And what's your draw in Leinster?
With Carlow, first round. If you win that game, please God, we've Kildare then in the quarter final. I think it's an open draw then, someone told me, for the semi-final. So, look, it's a good draw. It'll be interesting to see how it goes after the league in terms of from the Tier 2 perspective. If a lot of players lose players to America and stuff after that league from Division 3, Division 4, I don't think we lose anyone, to be honest. I think we've a very, very solid squad there. But I think it will be a challenge for some squads losing players.
Okay, apology, Lisa and Brian. Now, just stick with that. You've mentioned the Tier 2. Now, Brian's a big Kerry fan, as you probably know and all that. But So how do you feel, and how does your dressing room feel if you're in tier two, and the prospect of a final? It came up here in discussion earlier in the program about play the final on All Ireland final weekend. You know, Kevin McStay says it should be played with the All Ireland senior final. Some listeners are suggesting play it on the Saturday or whatever. What would it mean to you to play in a tier two final in Croke Park?
Well, I suppose I'm a good case study for this because yeah. I suppose I've played in every division, and also I would have played in the Tommy Murphy Cup. So we were relegated from Division 1 in 2006. We played in Division, say it would have been Division 2A, say, in 2007. Yeah. We finished in the bottom four, so we were then in the new Division 4 in 2008. And we were beaten in the first semi-final by Dublin in 2007, which meant we went straight to the Tommy Murphy Cup.
Yeah.
I suppose my experience of that was there was a little interest among players to play in it.
Little interest?
Little interest, yeah, because they sort of seen it as a competition that they had no real affiliation to. I suppose it's Tier 2. Maybe a little bit different. I know John Mahan, from his point of view, was spoken about it very, very fondly, in that he would have used it with Clare back in the early 90s to win an All-Ireland B Championship, I think it was.
But if he were still in Championship to September, is that not a good thing? Like, if you're all enjoying it.
I get that, yeah, but I suppose on the back of that as well, you have to realise they're all club players as well. And a lot of guys, I suppose, from our perspective in Offaly, the club championship is very, very strong. A lot of clubs would like to have their players back to be able to represent and play with their clubs if it's Championship or league games as well. So that would be a little bit of a slight worry. Having said that, look, if the game was played on an All-Ireland weekend, curtain raiser perhaps to an All-Ireland final, everyone wants to play in Croke Park.
Exactly, yes.
I suppose a carrot to that as well in terms of, and I'm actually not sure how this would play out, but does the winner of the Tier 2 Championship then become eligible for the Tier 1 in the following year? I don't think that actually is the case, but I think that would be a good carrot for county teams to actually say, okay, this is something that I can really aspire to win in.
It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Okay, that's Niall McNamee. Lisa Fallon and Brian Cooper, you're very welcome. Apologies if I stayed on there. Lisa, share the story you were starting to tell me. You came across Brian indirectly in the past.
Yeah, well, we were chatting outside, and obviously before I moved into coaching and that I was working, as you know, in radio reporting. And back in 2009, I had to cover Cheltenham for work, and as part of that I went down to Bannerstrand to Tom Cooper, and he had for Paddy the Plasterer and
Brian's dad.
So it was, we were just chatting about it, and that was my first encounter with Cheltenham really in that type of capacity. So I just remember how amazing Bannerstrand was, and
it's one of the nicest beaches in Ireland. I actually seen some in one of the papers, like at a list, like, and it was a long way down the list, but that's where Dad would bring a lot of the horses.
Every man thinks his own beach is the nicest, you know that, Brian?
Dad would bring the horses there still to this day. Like, it's only 20 minutes over the road from our house, and it's when the bad weather. I remember that year the weather was very bad and the gallops were all frozen. I think we had a bad snow, and Paddy won the Arkle that year, but without Bannerstrand, I'd say there would have been no Arkle winner. Yeah. I think it was only about 14 at that stage.
And what do you remember of the excitement now that Lisa talks about?
I remember still the piece on RT, on the news, and I think they had the tractor over there harrowing the sand for the horse, and I showed the excitement, and I think the people that were involved, you know, the syndicate that year at the Red and White Scar. So
yeah,
you need you could do with more syndicates like that still in the game.
The colour they bring, the
madness. I remember they had Dad up on their shoulders and Barry Geraghty up on their shoulders. You know, they were the really good days in the sport. And
you were over for the race, were you?
No, I missed it that year. I just left home to go serve my apprenticeship with Kevin Prendergast.
I don't believe you. Yeah. What age were you? 15?
15, yeah. So I left. I was packed up and shipped off to Kildare and trying to fend for myself.
Did not like it.
I know, yeah. And I haven't gone back.
So you watched it?
I watched it I'd say I watched it in the bookie summer, and I went back to work that evening, but it was unbelievable, you know, because it was Dad's second winner. He trained Total Enjoyment in 2004. Yeah. I was there that year, and I think it was 10 or 11, but I missed the year, Paddy, and I was sickened because I got to experience the year with Total Enjoyment and the lads that year at Paddy, you know, with Charlie Chalk and all involved. It was crazy, you know, and it was just, I was sick, but thankfully I got back there and got to see it myself sometimes.
And the whole of North Kerry backed it, I presume?
I'd say the whole of Kerry and Dublin backed it. I think the Gold had a few late hours later on that in the week, you know, but it was fantastic. It was great for Dad, for a small yard in Kerry,
course,
you know.
Yeah.
They were the days that you dream of.
They were great days, yeah. Lisa, with Chelsea, you had a celebration recently. Victory, yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we won the the Continental Tyres Cup, so the League Cup.
League Cup, effectively, yeah.
Yeah, so a last-minute winner, 93rd-minute winner, I think it was, against Arsenal. So it was amazing because I didn't realise, but it was Chelsea's first time to win that particular cup. So it was only ever Man City and Arsenal who had won it in before that. So it was, you know, when you get a last-minute winner, they're pretty special ones. So yeah, it was amazing.
Give us a background to it. Like, how many players are there? How many are full-time? What's the background?
It's a completely full-time setup. Everything is full-time. All the staff, all the players, in at 7:30 in the morning into Cobham. It's an amazing place.
That's where the men's team.
Yeah, we're like.
Because some clubs still have different venues for the women, don't they?
Yeah, and that's, I think, you know,
it's changing.
It is, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to go there when the opportunity arose, was because you had that ability to go in and not just work in that environment, but to learn and work with other people in the academy and in the men's team, and to have that opportunity to learn from people like that is quite incredible.
How many teams are there, Lisa?
So there's, in Chelsea, we have the women's first team, obviously the men's first team, and then you have the men's under 23s, and then you have all the underage.
But is there only one women's
squad? We have RTC, so we have girls under 18s, 16s, 14s, and that's a developing entity now.
Do you have a role with them?
No, oh. I just work with first team. So,
how big a squad is it?
It's 22 players, I think it is. So it's really, there's nothing really different in terms of the resources or the facilities that the men would have to what the women have. So it's a very, very professional environment. And
and just to fill people in on the Premier League, it's a smaller league, fewer teams in it than the men's league.
But again, it's you've the WSL, and which is the women's the top league, in the Premier League, and then you've got a championship. So very competitive. So you'd have Arsenal, Man City, and
you said they're the main three, are they?
Yeah. And then Manchester United, they're
putting money into it, I think, are they?
Yeah. But I think it's all the teams are putting money into it now, and because the women's game is such a massive growing entity, and it's really interesting because I was on a course there last year and in England with the League Managers Association, and I was working with a lot of managers who are in Championship and League One, even some Premier League managers, and the managers in League One and League Two were saying that the biggest competition to their clubs for sponsorship is the women's league.
Of course it is,
Now clubs are looking at the women's league now as having all the extra exposure. We've got games on all the top channels, and that level of exposure is huge. And so it's not going to stop growing.
No, I had noticed that, but I had forgotten that it could come, or I didn't realise it could come at the expense of the smaller men's clubs.
I
see the logic of it. Rochdale won't be on telly very often.
Well, this is the thing, I suppose it wasn't something that I ever really considered.
Yeah.
And you know, there's managers in those leagues and people in those clubs that were saying, it's a new dynamic. It's a new thing that they've had to deal with, and it's quite interesting.
Women's Gaelic football, Niall, has come on at an extraordinary boom as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was always there, I just think it's probably been spoken about an awful lot more now in terms of marketing as well around it. And it's been brilliant. And in fairness, the ladies themselves have been excellent ambassadors around it. You know, they all actually seem very, very supportive of each other as well, their own little community, to be able to drive it and support it, especially with the few of the ladies heading to Australia as well for the AFL.
Yeah.
It's definitely brought the profile of the games a lot higher. And also, they're actually playing very well down there.
Yeah.
So it shows the standard that they're playing at here.
When you hit, would you love to have played full time?
Oh, that's a tricky question. I suppose when I was younger, I suppose that would be the dream in terms of thinking, all I love doing and all I really wanted to do when I was young in school was play inter-county football or play football. So I suppose back then I would say, yeah, absolutely. When you get a little bit older, I suppose I look at the game overall and say, okay, well, what's going to be the best outcome for the game in general? Being honest, I think if you ask the young guy nowadays, early 20s, they would say, yeah, I'd love to be professional. Yeah. I actually don't think it probably would be the best way for the game to thrive and survive.
Why?
I just don't think the money is there to do it. I think you'd probably lose that community spirit.
Yeah.
For me personally, from a club level, It's so important. I think that filters down to a lot of clubs, and I think people are very, very close to their own communities. They can have a massive impact within their communities. Yeah. And I would fear that would go away, which I don't think would be a good thing.
Yeah, Brian Cooper, what was your club in Kerry?
Austin Stacks. Kieran Donaghy.
Kieran Donaghy.
He's the only one.
Currently, there was a great Laker gale about him. I don't know if you saw it, did you?
I saw highlights of it actually, yeah. Before, but I saw a lot of it on Twitter.
He's a very interesting fellow.
I suppose when the story about his dad and the Tyrone game, you know, he came out about it, which is, I mean, dare to say, a bit you'd forget as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has an appeal in Kerry, hasn't he? That.
Oh, he's star. Like, he walks down the street with his chest out there, you know.
He does.
I suppose the basketball now as well. You know, he's done what he's done for basketball in Ireland. Never mind in Kerry alone. You know, he's stepped it up to that level. You know, I'd say he's the type of man. Any sport he put his hand to, he'd try drive it to the next level. Even golf. And I heard he's shocking at it.
I don't think he'd agree with you on that, but I think a lot of people now don't realise how big basketball is in Kerry. It's only because I lived there and it's so central, and it's directly linked with GA as well, isn't it? So many of them play. Do you ever go to some of the basketball games?
No, and my mum was actually very much involved in one of the teams in Kerry, and she's been on to me for ages anytime I've been home to go. And you'd see in the Castle Bar in Tralee, like, that's a massive basketball GA pub, like, and a lot of the basketball teams will go in there after as well. You know, it's only getting bigger, and I think it's a sport that deserves maybe a bit more support behind it, because it's...
Well, an indoor arena and a good game, it gives an atmosphere and a crowd, because the noise is bouncing off the roof.
I've seen videos of it. It's like something you'd see in, you know, a smaller version of Madison Square Garden or somewhere.
But when I was there, Paddy O'Connor, who sadly passed away recently, like the Americans coming in, Killarney were unbeatable in Irish context. It was unbelievable buzz. And then for the first time, when, you know, there's black basketball players coming into Killarney, and the talk of the place, these big, huge 6'5", 6'7" guys, and it really made an impact. But all of the Kerry players used to play the town leagues and all this. Yeah. And I often think it helped them as footballers.
I'd say as well, skill level and making space in a small court. And being aware, you know, I gave it a go when I was in secondary school, but unfortunately everybody started growing and I stopped growing, so I stopped that anyway.
Are you reasonably tall for a jockey?
Yeah, I'm 5'11". So
sorry, I didn't mean to.
Don't get defensive. You meet people there and they'd say, you're a jockey. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, you're not your steer. People around, you know, in Dublin and other counties who wouldn't know anything about racing just think as a jockey is 4'10" or something and little small little people. But no, I suppose I'm a nice size. I'm lucky I don't struggle with my weight. I can eat whatever I want, but I don't stand out. I suppose you're the stereotypical jockey, which is a help.
And the work schedule of a jockey anyway means they're naturally fit anyway, because you're working all the time.
Yeah, but it's, I actually had a discussion with someone about it. I think fitness has come into it's come into a new level, and I think you need to be doing...
Do you do gym work as well?
Yeah, I think you have to do it now. It should make sense. When you're hitting the ground at 30, 40 miles an hour, you need to build up as much muscle as you can. I know they say muscle builds on weight, but I think if you can be that bit stronger, and I spent a lot of time with Enda King in Santry through my injuries, and he had it driven into me, and I've seen the effects it's had him. It's helped me.
Is Enda a surgeon for giving you a physio?
Well, he's the head of physio there.
All right, sorry.
I would have went to him when I broke my leg that time in Cheltenham, and Ruby was there at the same time. The two of us just started with Enda, and Ruby kept going to him and I kept going to him as well, and he definitely, I got a little bit heavier, but I felt I was able to take falls a little bit better, take belts a little bit better, and I think it's something that should be brought into our sport a bit more, and have a personal trainer where you're working 2 to 3 days a week, because I think it does help me anyway, and it's something.
That injury you referred to was a horrific injury, and it came kind of at the peak, didn't it?
Yeah,
you're writing for Jiggins.
I just got the job, I suppose, January 2015, and so I was only in the job 3 months. It was the second day at Cheltenham, and I broke my leg quite badly.
I was
lucky to get back. There was talks at the time that I mightn't get back riding, but I think without Santry and then the King, I probably wouldn't have got back as quick, and maybe not mightn't have got back at all, because, you know yourself, I was 21 years of age. I would have been sitting around, moping around, but he got me up, got me motivated, and I was lucky to have Jigginstown as well to, you know, when you have all them horses to come back to.
And it's, I don't, you were out for how long?
8 months. 9 months, sorry, yeah, 9 months today.
And there's no fear when you come back, is there?
No, if the fear was there, I wouldn't have come back. And it's the same if the fear was there now, I would have, you walk away, you know, it's not something you can afford to be going out on every day of the week, worrying if something's going to happen to you, because that's when accidents do happen. You just have to go out and be driven, and I love my job, and you know, just look forward to getting up every morning.
Lisa, you were doing the commentary in the Irish women's match the other night against Greece. I watched it. We're in a reasonably good position, but not safe yet.
No, but like, I think we're in a fantastic position. You know, to be second in the group with 10 points out of a possible 12 is brilliant. But I love the mentality of the players. I was even just this morning listening to some stuff from Katie McCabe, and she's saying that game doesn't matter unless we go and beat Montenegro now. And it's not, I just love that change in mindset, that it's not about us thinking anymore, oh, listen, you know, it's important that we go away and we don't lose.
Yeah.
You know, the mindset is, we're going to win this game. And I think that's brilliant. And it's a real shift. And because these are really, really good players. Like Greece was a tough team. They sat in, made it difficult and counterattacked. And, you know,
and the last 15 minutes pressed again, similar to the first.
They did. Yeah. They changed their shape and then they pushed on, which you were always going to expect. But that was their tactic, to try and restrict Ireland from scoring and then to try and keep themselves in the game till late and then go for it. It worked for them over there in November, over in Athens. So it was a carbon copy of what they did over there to what they did here in Dublin. But it's a great time for the girls, you know, and Vera Powell has come in and she's, you know, different mindset, different ideas, and the girls seem to be really warming to that, and it's great to see. It's great.
In terms of making it in England, which is not easy, it's no different than fellas going to try and make it in England, are we going to see more Irish girls in time get to the Premier League, or are they taking other European countries in?
Yeah, I think, well, if you look at it, there's so many players that are, you know, they're coming from all over the world. Like, you've got Vivian Miedema, who was, you know, Holland's player.
Your Sam squad, Kerr, for instance,
Sam Kerr has come to us from Australia. You know, the whole league is full of Europe's best players. Yeah. And I don't see that changing unless they put in a cap on UK players with the number.
You must have a number in the
squad. I think that's imminent. I think that is imminent. And it would be similar to what happened in the Premier League. It would ultimately be detrimental to the England women national team if they don't do something like that. So I do think that's imminent. But for Irish girls going across, I think the most important thing is that they now have a pathway to earn a living from playing football.
And you can earn a living, can you?
Oh, absolutely. You can earn a good living from playing football. Like, it's, you know, I think...
And that's only going to grow, isn't
well,
it?
Well, the money, I put it to you this way, the money in the WSL would be higher than it is in the Airtricity League Premier Division.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, and the prize money, overall prize money for both is higher in the WSL.
And that's just going to grow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Based on what you said. Well, while we were waiting for a goal to happen in the 3 o'clock kickoffs in the Premier League, I asked Niall McNamee what team he supports. Aston Villa, we were all a bit surprised.
Yeah, so I think it was around 1992 or 93.
Oh, they had the Irish lads there, had they?
Well, yeah, no, but I remember I was kind of getting a bit older, so I started to understand it. Yeah. And I said, right, I want to start supporting a team. And Alan, my brother, supported Liverpool. So I said, I want to support Liverpool. And he said, no, you can't support them, I support them. So I looked at the league table and Man United were top. So I said, right, can I support them? And he goes, no, you can't support them. We hate them.
That was fair enough,
So Aston Villa were second. And I said, can I support them? And he goes, yeah, you can support them. And I don't think they've been second since.
That's when they nearly won. They went close to winning the league, Back in those days, you were too young. I was on 2FM with Ian Dempsey in the mornings and had the ABU thing going, you know, anyone but United. And we used to play zippity-doo-dah when United would lose. But Villa, so that year I remember I was a Villa fan. Yeah. Newcastle were in the mix as well another year, you know, with Kevin Keegan's team and all that. And we always supported whoever. But you're stuck with Aston Villa anyway.
Yeah, through thick and thin. So I was over there actually.
Thin and thin, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah, I was over there a few weeks ago at the place Southampton a couple of weeks ago.
Did they lose that?
They lost that.
Yeah. And you went to that thinking that might be one they'd win, did you?
That was the plan, but it didn't work out, unfortunately.
They've great support, haven't they?
They do, yeah. Ah, look, it's good. Like, I'll be honest, I can dip in and out. So the last couple of years, sort of, and then it's nice to get back into it as well. But it's, I always keep an eye out and make sure see how they're going.
I had an extraordinary story there once. I went over and Paul McGrath was leaving two tickets for me. This is Gosford. There was three windows where you'd collect tickets from a player. And there was I could tell they were playing Man United, and I could tell it was the Neville sister, you know, the netball manager
Tracy.
Now. Yeah. And she was there. I just heard her give her name. And a fella, there was three windows, only about two or three people in each queue. I was with one of my kids. And the fella at the window on my right says, "Hello, Des Cahill, please." And was handed a ticket. And I put my hand on his arm. I said, "Excuse me, I'm Des Cahill." And he says, "No, I am Des Cahill." And I didn't let go of his arm, you know, because, and a policeman standing by, he was, "Is everything all right?" And I said, "No, I'm Des." And she's, "So is there two envelopes for Des?" "No, there's not." I said, "Well, it's definitely me." And he went, "No, I am." And it turned out he was a doctor in Gabriel Egan met him subsequently. He's a doctor in Birmingham who acted as doctor for the Villa under 18s or something. And he was a friend, personal friend of Graham Taylor's, and his name was the same as mine. I mean, the chance of it happened. So after about 11 minutes, I had to let go of his arm. Anyway, that's by the by. My Aston Villa story, I blush every time I think of it. Anyway, Villa, if they get relegated, Conor Hurran's doing really well there, isn't he?
Yeah. No, they're actually not playing too bad. They've played in some really, like last weekend, they should have at least gotten the draw last weekend. They're probably just lacking a bit of quality, like, but it's...
It's funny though when you hear talk. You're a Man United fan, aren't you, Brian?
Yeah. Ollie Murphy is a massive Aston Villa fan.
Is he?
Trainer, and he goes to like any game possibly going. The manager was down in his yard on Wednesday.
Dean Smith.
He came down to see it, so you know, so he'll have a horse there soon enough, I'd imagine.
Good way. Yeah. Oh, good for him. Yeah. But when you hear if they have a bit more quality, but Lisa, a bit more quality now means a board spending 60 or 70 million. I mean, it's mad money.
It's big money nowadays, isn't it? Like, it's,
Just in the Women's Premier League, are there financial transfers?
Yeah. They're there. They are.
And they'll grow
as
well.
They will grow. As the league grows, it's only going to be an upward spiral at this stage. But and I think as well, because of the success and the way it's growing, I think the impact will be that teams will invest more and more money. So you'll get the big clubs who have women's clubs now will start to the relationships will become tighter and they will move closer together. Mm. I think we'll see more and more money, because if you think about it, the money that is invested in the wages, they're so different. Like, and but if you were to put that money, even a small amount of money, from the men's budget into the women's, it would be huge money in the women's, and it would be a drop in the ocean in the men's.
Yeah.
And like, I see it changing. Like, it'll be.
I've no doubt. Brian Cooper, you're off to Cheltenham. It's the Albert Bartlett, isn't it? We're all watching.
Yeah, that's Friday.
So tell us about this horse that has everyone so excited.
So look, I suppose it's not coming from Willie Mullins or Gordon Elliott or Henry de Bromwich. It's, you know, Paul and Nolan, who's had it quite maybe two or three years. He's had his record in Cheltenham is actually very good, but he just hasn't had a good horse in the last couple of years. And I suppose he won his Grade One at the Dublin Racing Festival on the first race on the first day, and it's just gone from strength to strength. There's a lot of people supporting him, and
well, there's a huge Wexford support, isn't there?
Massive, yeah. I'd say now if he comes up in front on Friday, the celebrations would be unbelievable. But it's great for the lads because they've put so much effort and they've done well to hold on to the horse.
It's the Nolans.
Yeah. Nolans. He very easily could have been sold to...
There were attempts to buy him.
There was a lot of money in offer. But to be fair, they formed a syndicate from other owners in the yard, and...
Give us the name of the horse, because people will be writing this down.
That's the latest exhibition, obviously. Yeah, but I suppose you've Jim Coffey of Softco got involved, John Brennan, and Jim Myrna, the owner, kept 20% as well. So and of course the Browns, who used to own Jonkel, they all got involved to keep him in the yard, which was unbelievable for the lads. And you know, to have one of the main Irish chances going over, and for Paul and James there, it's just, and for me as well, it's great.
And because a lot of people who don't follow it closely might fully appreciate it. The Willie Mullins yard, the Gordon Elliott yard, they're going to dominate.
Yeah, well,
and the small yard struggle to.
I speak like Gordon has 50 going over, Willie has 40 to 50 going over as well. So that's 100 horses between two people alone. And
what if you got one or two?
Paul has three going over. Yeah, yeah. They've Discorama runs in the Ultima on Tuesday, and they have a filly in the Mayor's Novice on Thursday. So to have three runners going, sorry, they have four. FitzHenry goes as well for JP McManus. Yeah. So to have four from probably about 40 horses in their yard is very, it's not a bad effort now from where they're coming from.
And have you taken part in some of these Cheltenham preview nights?
I've done two. Personally, I'm not a fan of them. They're long nights, and I do one at home in Kerry. I did that last Wednesday in my dad's local pub. I've done it every year, and
supporting the locals.
Yeah, and you know what? Yeah. They get the same crowd every year, and it's great. It's great because the same people come. And I did one in Cork, previous Friday.
And for people who haven't been there, it's basically full of room. Everyone, come on, give me winners.
You're basically like, what's going to win? And there'll be many arguments throughout the night. You know, there's a lot. They'll have a panel between 3 and 5, and everyone has their opinions, and they're not short to say who's right and who's wrong. Look, they are good. They're good information, but I think some of them, there's a lot of them on, and sometimes it's the same things over and over again. I don't mind doing one or two, but you know, there can be a lot of false information given away as well, and there'll be things in the papers the next day which mightn't have been said at all.
We were just talking about Cheltenham earlier, and Lisa, did you go to Cheltenham that time?
Yeah.
The Monday night at Cheltenham, that's the night before it starts. We're saying it's a bit like a wedding because everyone has money in their pocket and everyone has belief and hope this is going to be great, you know. And you might be with four lads who are all going to back four different horses in the same race, and the next night it's not the same happiness.
I saw a funny photo. It goes around every year. It was on Twitter of like the Monday at Cheltenham. There's this guy smoking a cigar and drinking a champagne, and then the second, like, I think come Tuesday evening, that he's sitting on the streets with his rag clothes on and not a penny to his name. But it's a great week, you know. The Irish that go over, and I've seen over the years, like my friends from school who, like, over the last couple of years, I would have never thought they had anything to do with racing, but they all go, and even go for a day or 2 days. Like, it's just everyone in you speak to, it's all Cheltenham. Are you going to Cheltenham? Are you riding in Cheltenham? Or, you know, it's just, it is the Olympics or the All-Ireland of our sport.
Yeah. Now, Niall McNamee, one of the reasons I admire him so much is because Niall came out very publicly about his own gambling issue and addiction. And when we're talking about this and romanticising in a way about it, now, I know you've talked about it a lot before, and in a most articulate and eloquent way, can I say, by the way, but was Cheltenham, like, for you at that time, was that central, or was every race meeting the same? Did it matter?
Yes, it probably would have lit the fire, if that makes sense. Mm. So I probably would have.
Because people talking about it and the buzz.
Yeah, and the buzz around it, and I suppose the adrenaline rush you get from backing a horse, backing a winner, that stays with you, you know. I suppose the thing I would have learned in the years previous or following that would have been that every day was kind of Cheltenham, or every week, you know. So everyone else, the country kind of shuts down in some small way. Like, I know next week for me, it's all social media. It's changing the radio station when I'm in the car. Won't be listening to the results, any of that sort of thing, because I just can't stay around that environment. And a lot of people just get involved in that type of euphoria, I suppose, for a week. But when that week would be over, everybody else would go back to work or they go back to their normal everyday living, whereas I'd still be in the bookies if it's Lingfield or if it's wherever the race might be on, you know. So
you don't mind me talking about it here? No,
not at all. I suppose the one thing I will say, I spent the last 8 years trying to forget the names of horses that I knew, and I'm after learning about 5 or 6 of them there in the last 10 minutes. But no, I'm only joking. It's
So it's 8 years, is it, since you've...
Yeah, a little over 8 years. Yeah. So November...
That's fantastic.
November 2011 was the last time I had a bet, so it's...
That's fantastic.
Yeah, look, it's... again, I get it, you know, from a Cheltenham point of view, from gambling, I understand, and there's people out there that can have a bet and have a social bet. I suppose my big issue is once I started and had one bet, I just wasn't able to stop, you know. So a lot of work has to go into the recovery side of it, and I just keep it very, very close to my heart.
And I know you went to Gamblers Anonymous and you found that really good, didn't you? Would you still go?
Yeah, I would. I suppose I've met a very, very strong network of people, I suppose, over the last number of years that are in recovery. I suppose the best thing I can say around, I say this a lot, but the best thing I can say about my recovery from gambling is a lot of the things that I wanted when I was gambling. So let it be
buzz and kick.
Buzz, the kick, yeah. I suppose money, to be able to travel, go on holidays, normal everyday stuff, like, you know, having your own house or apartment or car. These are the things I dreamt of, I suppose, when I was gambling, but also add the buzz into that. But it's only actually since I stopped gambling that I was actually able to achieve some of those things, you know. So it's an interesting take on it, you know. And I suppose, again, you mentioned as well around the inter-county footballer being a professional. I suppose that's all I wanted to be. And then I tied gambling into that as well and said, well, actually, here's the way I can make money. Mm. Don't have to really work that hard. I can still go training tonight or whatever. And I suppose, as I say, for me, some people can do it once a week, once a month. Just once I started, I wasn't able to stop.
And even after 8 or 9 years, then when there's a chat like this, you know, and obviously your pals will be chatting about Chelsea, maybe. Do you still find it difficult, or does it get any easier to cope with the chat about it?
I do find it easier, to be honest. I suppose I've learned over the years to be able to switch my ear off when I have to. Good. So I'd be involved in dressing rooms where lads would be talking about gambling and soccer or whatever it might be. Now, it's not up to me to go over to them and say, look, lads, I have a gambling addiction, I can't be listening to this. But it is my responsibility to say, okay, this really isn't the place where I should be associated with this conversation, and I'll walk out the door or whatever. So it's just knowing that. And I got a good education. Obviously, I went for treatment for the addiction back in 2011. Got a really, really good education around, first of all, why I was gambling, the reasons behind it, but also, I suppose, the smaller steps to take in terms of keeping myself safe from it.
But you've been good to help. You've been able to help other people as well, haven't you?
Yeah, and I suppose people would often say it's great that you're able to help other people, but I suppose for me, a lot of people would, let it be family members or you know, people themselves that are in distress would reach out and say, look, can I meet up and have a chat? But that really helps me as well.
Does it? I was going to ask, is it an imposition?
No, absolutely not. Sometimes I don't take, see, I suppose I have an ability to let it go. So if someone's telling me a lot of stuff and X, Y, and Z, I'll be able to help them, support them, bring them to a meeting, bring them to see a counsellor, whatever it might be. But then I kind of have to hand over the reins to them to say, look, this is your life now, you need to run it.
Because they're all damaged, I presume, when they talk to you.
Exactly. I suppose the one thing I can do is empathise with them because I know where they've come from, but also it shows me what it was like when I was gambling. Mm. So sometimes I can forget that. And that's, I suppose, the key thing with the meetings would be I go back into that scenario and say, geez, remember that. And sometimes I can forget that very, very quickly. And I suppose that's the thing with the meetings and meeting people in that network is it reminds me of those days. And, you know, sometimes I might be having a bad day today, for example, but it could be 100 times worse if I was gambling, if that makes sense.
I don't know. I don't want to be prying too much. Are the meetings the same people, kind of? All the, like, or would you go to different venues?
There'd be different venues, yeah. I suppose, again, it's Gamblers Anonymous, so I suppose I'm kind of cutting the cross in one sense that I've spoken about it, and I don't really promote in terms from a meeting point of view. Yeah, absolutely, there'd be different people coming in. The age bracket is getting a lot younger than what it used to be.
That's one thing. And you've spoken in schools, haven't you?
Yeah, I go to a lot of, actually, it was in Croke Park a few weeks ago. I spoke to the Health and Wellbeing Committee in Croke Park, so a lot of clubs, GA clubs, would ask me to go and do talks and stuff, and it's difficult with time and stuff.
Yeah.
But the Health and Wellbeing group in Croke Park are now looking to get clubs to contact them directly. They'll set up say community talks where we can go in and deliver some smaller workshops and stuff like that. Again, it's just about awareness education, just letting people know what's out there, how their support services available, because that's the biggest thing for me when I was gambling was I thought I was the only person in the world who had the problem. So like Brian mentioned, watching racing in the bookies, I'd be in the bookies, my friends could be in the bookies, but they'd have a bet and they'd walk out and go home. And I just couldn't leave. I'd stay there and did not realise or understand why that was the case. So it was only, I suppose, once I got a bit of education, I was able to figure out why I was doing it.
The one change I've noticed, and you've mentioned, is the age profile. I'd be in dressing rooms, or not my own, but you'd hear the young fellas talking. Betting now is a standard thing, which wasn't, in my group, it was sort of growing up, it wasn't the same thing. So the number of young people betting has definitely increased, isn't it, Brian?
I'd see there, like on the last week there, if I've put up anything promoting Cheltenham or things I do, you'd have people writing to you on Instagram, Twitter, any tips. And these are 16 to 23-year-olds, you know, it's crazy, but that's just the way the way it's gone, I suppose, isn't it?
And one last thing on this before we go to the half times. I don't know many young women who bet, Lisa. Do you?
Not really.
It seems a very male kind of thing, is it?
It does. You'd be surprised.
Oh, would I? Yeah, I don't know.
It's not even, it might necessarily be, say, from gambling perspective, but there's so much stuff now, like apps on your phone around doing bingo, around doing roulette, around all these types of casino games and stuff like that, that mightn't necessarily be programmed towards, they're actually targeted more so at the female market. So you would see now a bigger switch for people coming in getting help that are female as well.
And it's that area rather than horses or the bookie shops.
It can be any area, of course, but that would be primarily what you would see would be the case.
I know you're not looking for, but fair play to you for what you do in helping others. I think it's great, and for staying away from it anyway. We're chatting away here in studio with our panel, Lisa Fallon, Niall McNamee and Brian Cooper. Niall is complimenting Brian on his muscles, would you believe, what we're going on here. But Shane Lowry got mentioned there and everyone kind of sparked up. It meant a lot in Offaly, Niall.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was... as we mentioned off air, he's well loved, I suppose, yeah, all over the country.
It's kind of ridiculous how loved he is, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been to see him play a good few times. Actually, not in Ireland or in England. We went to I was actually in Dubai in November, and in the race to Dubai. Yeah, so it was it's an interesting.
Did
day
you follow him?
Yeah, followed him for the first 9 holes and then grabbed it in around the 17th or 18th.
Did he see you?
Oh yeah. We've been in contact before.
Just, I know, but did he say hello during it or?
He didn't this time, but actually me and Laura, my fiance, we were over in Orlando a couple of years ago, and we met with Wendy, Shane's wife, going around, and it's the most, it's frightening, like in just a normal everyday tournament, it's the most laid back thing you'll ever see. He walked over, gave Wendy and ourselves a bit of food during the round, and was chatting away, and back out and take a few shots, like, it's incredible, you know? When you see it on television, it's the most laid back environment, which I was brilliant, last year was brilliant, but it's brilliant in the sense that I suppose he hasn't met in terms of from a major point of view and from, I suppose, the exemptions then to all the tournaments over the next couple of years. It sets him up well for the rest of his life.
Yeah. And yet, Lisa, would you follow the golf a bit?
Yeah, you do when you can. I was chatting to Brian actually earlier, we're saying it can be really difficult to stay up to date with
other sports.
When you're involved in professional sport, it can because it takes over so much. And it's, I actually, it was a bizarre thing where 2 weeks ago we were going in and training and we were told, oh, we're going golfing today. And I broke out in a sweat. Like I was like going golfing. Like I played camogie, so I don't have the most controlled swing. I can hit it fairly far, but you wouldn't know necessarily where it would go, you know.
There'd be
a few fours But I enjoy watching it when I can, you know. It's an amazing sport. I love the psychology of it and it's
a lonely place to be, isn't it? Pressure, isn't it? Do you play a bit, Brian?
Yeah, I play a bit. I find it great for just zoning out for me for racing and that. And it's because
a lot of the racing community play golf.
Yeah, we would. I suppose we have a lot of, like, when there's not racing, we're riding out in the morning, but then afternoons are pretty free for us. So I'm lucky. I remember the Royal Curra, it's actually right across the road from my house, so I can stroll across there and play 9 on my own if I want. Or I suppose I'm lucky in Kerry as well. We have some pretty amazing golf course, and I've got to play Ballybunion and Tralee with them and try to take a few quid off the Bomber the odd time playing, but it's quite hard.
It would be hard, yeah. Bomber wouldn't, and you play as well, now, do you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's funny. I used to live in Newbridge. I never played in the Curragh. I used to play in Newbridge Golf Club as well. So, the Brian's going to ring me out for a round the next. When he's back.
Yeah. He's getting a bit longer.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll have so much money now after Sheldon when he wins. But look at, we wish you well, lads. It's been great. You head to Cheltenham on
Monday morning. Yeah, I'll fly and usually get there. I go Sunday sometimes. I'm going to go Monday this year, go walk the track, and have two rides on Tuesday, and it's a long week.
It is a long week, and particularly when, I'm not saying all your focus, every ride is very important to you, but obviously Friday is very important to you.
Yeah, it is.
And you've 5 days to hang
on. But I suppose my point of view, from when I was riding at Jigginson, I'm used to like the year one in Doncaster, that was Friday. So you take it day by day, get through the day and concentrate on your rides that day. Yeah. You go home. It's quite, we don't get to go out, or we go for a bit of dinner after racing, but we share a house with a few people and zone out and, you know.
But it's hard. I mean, for those who haven't been there, it's a reasonably big town, but the numbers are ridiculous. So where can you go for something to eat and get a bit of peace and quiet?
Yeah, well, there's a few restaurants, you know, we try to book a table there, but you're always, no matter where you're going to get people that are going to come up to you and ask you for tips, or say you should have won in that one day or something, you know. But it's, you try to get in there around 8 o'clock, because it's a long, we would be tired, you know, because we're up, we've tried out every morning anyway, so you're up early enough either way. But it's a draining week, and you're kind of glad to see your bed around 9 or 10 o'clock in the evenings anyway, because it's, I suppose you're just, when you're at the race, you're in the zone and you're on the go.
Well, we wish you well with that. And Lisa, for you, Chelsea, what's next now? You've won trophy in the bag.
Yeah, we're away to Everton next Sunday in the FA Cup. And then I think we've 6 league.
What round of the FA Cup is that?
Fifth, yeah.
So that'll be quarter final, is it?
Yeah, And then we've six league games left then after that. So every day is a cup final here on in, you know. So hopefully we can keep winning and
But you're loving it though.
Absolutely,
It's great for you. Well done. And Niall, who are Offaly playing next week?
We have Tipperary. Tipperary away next Sunday. So,
and they're battling. I have a friend from Leitrim. He's watching your results and Tipperary results and all of this.
I know. It's funny because last weekend we played down last weekend and didn't go well. And if we'd have won that game, probably one more win would have got us promotion. You know. Yeah. So it's, the divisions are so tight now. Like.
Yeah.
So hopefully, if we get a win next weekend, one result or one or two results go away next weekend, we still could be in the push for promotion. But likewise, if you lose next weekend, you're
in trouble. Yeah, and Tip will be chasing those points, and they're a good side too.
They're a good side as well, and plus we'll be bought on 5 points as far as I know if they beat us, which would leave them ahead of us in the head-to-head. So all those things coming into play as well.
And we're down good.
And we're good. Yeah, they were decent. They're very well organised. They have a lot of pace in their team. So our lads, we'd be the first to admit, they probably didn't play as well as what they can.
Yeah.
But it's a learning curve as well. Like as I say, the league is probably. You'd like to probably see it playing in when the weather gets a little bit better because I think we found last year definitely with Championship we have a lot of pace in the team, a lot of young guys that are well able to move, and it's when the ground gets a bit harder they're able to go and express themselves. So that's a challenge.
You can tell you're looking forward to the Championship.
Really looking forward to it. It's great. Like, it's a bit like Brian looking forward to next week. It's what we live for. Like, it's what we wanted to do since we were able to do it. So it's great to be able to look forward to it.
Great. Well, it was great having you, and I enjoyed the chat very much. Thank you very much, Lisa and Niall. Brian, best of luck to you.
Thank you.
I'll go well. You carry our best wishes.
Saturday Sport on RTE Radio 1.